blood, the sweat, and the tears of sheroes and heroes, some whose names we know and some whose names we do not know. But I will tell you something, we have been here before. Now the only difference is we got some company, Rev. We got our gay lesbian sisters and brothers with us this time. We got our Hispanic, Asian, Native American sisters and brothers with us this time. I think Dr. Reverend Martin Luther King said we may not have gotten here on the same ship, but we are in the same boat right now.
In Father Teresa's Wine Cellar, we believe all oppression is intersectional. And this means our analysis of current events frequently includes discussion of difficult and explicit content. Any combination of the following topics could be included in our show: murder, rape, war, climate change, racism, sexism, violence, sexual violence, homophobic violence, heterocentrism, discrimination and abuse against individuals of nonconformist sexuality, domestic violence, child abuse, child rape, child neglect, elderly abuse, verbal abuse, police brutality, microaggressions, ableism, cyberbullying, genital mutilation, ideological extremism, and people just being total fucking assholes.
All right, Ann Phoenix Cleater, it's on you.
All right, we are doing an episode of the Black Podcast, and today we have a special guest. I'm very, very excited about this. We have Benjamin Thomas Wolfe with us tonight, who is running for the 5th District. And hopefully we can talk a little bit about politics, talk a little bit about Chicago, have some fun, enjoy ourselves. And the goal here is to get to know who's running on a more progressive platform, a more leftist platform, and this is definitely one of those candidates. So you know, in the Wine Cellar, we had to get him on the show because we like leftist fucking politics, okay? Let's be real. So, say hi, let everyone know who you are.
Well, greetings. Thanks for having me on the show. Again, my name is Benjamin Thomas Wolfe, and I'm a candidate for the United States Congress here in the 5th District of Illinois, which is... it's most of North and West Chicago. It's Chicago, parts of Cook County, and then actually goes into DuPage County. Ideally, and oddly enough, it goes right down Wolf Road, so it's easy to remember. I've had a wonderful public service career. I was with the FBI. I got recruited out of college by the FBI. I had a wonderful career with them. Then I went to the State Department. I was a United States diplomat for many years with service in Africa and multiple assignments in Iraq. And then I came to Chicago to finish my PhD. I decided to stay. I fell in love with the city and realized very quickly that I did not love the elected officials. And I've been planning this congressional run, I think, for a few years. And then it was able to be executed, you know, within the last year. And we're hoping it's going quite well. We had the election, for those of you that don't know when the election is, early voting started last week. So you can go downtown and vote. For those of you in DuPage, there's a location out in DuPage County. I'll read that to you from the website in a little bit. But please vote. If nothing else, just please go vote. Here in Cook County, we've got something really interesting on the ballot. There's a referendum to legalize cannabis at Cook County. But just make sure that you are involved in the democratic process.
Absolutely. Thank you. So I have to ask, I was reading your website and you have this like super, super extensive work history and you've done all these really cool things across the world. So why politics?
I get asked that all the time, and I'll be really honest. I see this as an extension of my public service career. I don't see this politics.
Okay.
I see it as an extension of my public service career. I've been working since I was 12 in the public works and the parks and rec department as a kid, and I just enjoyed working for my community. I thought there was something just more fulfilling about it. You know, you're working with your neighbors and your friends, and you're doing things locally, and you're an agent of change, and you get to, you know, get to know your community and the families, and you get to see them grow. And you, and I really feel like now that I'm in Chicago, I'm a part of this community, mm-hmm. and I'm really disappointed by, like I said, all of the elected officials. I don't think there's a single one that I've met that I've been really impressed with. Mm-hmm. I hate to say that. Not a single one in Chicago, and as a candidate, I am meeting a lot of people, from the mayor to the state reps to the U.S. senators, everybody, and I am just, I think that it's my generation's time now to really step up and step forward and start leading, you know, whether it's on a local level, a state level, a county level, or a national level, start leading, you know, just start leading, start being leaders in our own communities.
Absolutely.
And pushing, like you said, not just the liberal agenda, but just the good agenda, the dignified mm-hmm. agenda.
Yes.
I think that's why I'm here.
Yeah, and you know, I find that to be an issue a lot, is as soon as someone says, like, liberal or progressive or leftist, folks start getting scared. But a lot of leftist ideas are very community based, right? They're very much about making strong communities, and I think that we get a bad rap, right? People are like, oh, you just want to be communist like Venezuela. Like, I just want people to have health care and food.
We had somebody from the Democratic Socialist, who's a friend of mine, come into our office, and, mm-hmm. and he was asking me some interesting questions. He said, you know, do you consider yourself a socialist? I said, no, absolutely not. Mm-hmm. And then he talked through some of the Democratic Socialist platforms, and they're very, very similar to ours, mm-hmm. which is interesting to me. I never identified as a socialist. I never identified as anything. I'm a person who's a humanitarian and now a pacifist, and you know, I care about families and just basic, simple things, everyday life.
Right.
And I don't mind defined by this or that. And mm-hmm. that's been a tough thing for me. You know, I had a great experience with the government, a great experience with a nonprofit I started here in Chicago. I've worked in different spectrums, from intelligence to military to diplomatic to law enforcement. And I've never liked being pigeonholed as one thing. Mm-hmm. And I realized that early on, a lot of my ideals and values and cultural kind of heritage make me a Democrat. I fall flatly and simply and well within the Democratic, you know, ideals and rituals.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's important to stand for something, like they say, but it also creates a lot of tension. As you said, I said, you know, the minute you have a Democrat, there has to be a Republican, and that's how the party system keeps going. It creates this animosity.
Mm-hmm.
And let me tell you why that's so interesting. And I didn't understand this until just the other night. We had a forum. You know, there are multiple people running for this seat.
Right, right.
I'm one of four. So there's the incumbent. Mm-hmm. And I don't say his name because I don't advertise for him.
Right.
So we don't have to say his name tonight.
Okay.
It starts with a Q. Just remember that.
The only thing I will say is that person is not as leftist as some people have made him out to be. That's all I have to say. Or not as
Right. And we'll talk about the differences. We'll talk about that.
Mm-hmm.
So there's the incumbent. There's me. There's a woman with the last name Mustafa who seems very nice. She's a real estate agent. I don't think she has any actual work experience.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a gentleman who's a professor and has a PhD. And we're all running as Democrats and quote-unquote progressives. And we had this little debate, which turned out just to be a forum. And afterwards, I pulled a friend of mine aside who has no experience in politics. None. And I said, so, you know, what did you think? He said, Benjamin, it was boring. It was three people on stage all agreeing with each other.
Okay.
And that's when it made sense to me. That's why you have to have an enemy. You have to create some drama and some animosity, or there's no interest.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like these days, you know, press and the Twitter sphere, as I found out this last weekend with these cannabis photos, you have to be doing something outrageous. For the last year, I've been just a really good candidate, a good person, pushing all the, you know, the right or the humanitarian aspects of it, and it doesn't work.
Mm-hmm.
Being a good person will never get you elected to office. You have to find a way to either tear down your opponent or be unique. It's really challenging to become an individual candidate and to do something different. And this last weekend, we put out these pictures of me smoking cannabis,
mm-hmm.
a joint in my hand with an American flag in the backdrop. And boy, did it go nuts. And I never have experienced anything like that. I was on Fox News today.
Mm-hmm.
The CNN writer reached out to me. We're hoping to have a nice article on CNN.
Mm-hmm.
It's just been interview after interview after interview. And yours, of course, which we planned months ago, I think.
Right, yes.
But you have to clearly do something that is outrageous or unique or bizarre just to get some traction. Not even attention, just traction. Mm-hmm. So the party system is strange but necessary, and the rivalries are strange and necessary. And it's been a learning curve for me. I've never run for office, but boy, oh boy, it's a ride.
Well, I have to say, I'm very glad that you opted to go for the find a way to be creative and unique versus just tearing down other candidates. I do definitely appreciate that route, for sure.
I'm a good jerk. I can be a real jerk. The government trained me. I'm very good at these things.
Okay.
And we have people on our staff that are big thinkers. We have a girl named Blair, a woman named Blair on our staff who's been with me since the beginning. And, you know, she's an environmentalist, and she worked on the big documentary that talks about changing the worldview and talking about how we interact with the planet. And she keeps pushing these, you know, be the better person, be a good leader, be kind, be compassionate. And I think that's really worked for me. It's been very good for me. But there are times when I'm not so kind and it gets attention, that's for sure.
Yeah. Well, I have to say, I liked the photo. It's been really interesting reading the responses on social media about it. Some people are very, very in favor. Some people are definitely not. But I do think that you...
Which photo? Are we talking about the cannabis photo?
Yes. Yes. Although the AR-15
one... If there are listeners out there, if you guys attract many listeners, then they should go to our website. And you can Google Wolf, like the animal, Wolf for Congress, or Benjamin Thomas Wolf. And our website pops up, and believe it or not, I made that photo our whole homepage. So if you pull it up, there's nothing else on our homepage but that photograph now.
I love it.
Yeah, in the bottom it says vote, or legalize cannabis, vote March 20th, I think. And it's pretty interesting. I knew that I wanted a portrait of me smoking cannabis. I knew that I wanted something. I was looking at these really cool black and white photos of, you know, Gandhi and Mother Teresa smoking cigarettes or whatever it was they're smoking. I wanted something classic.
Mm-hmm.
And I had this photographer come over, and we said, you know, it's in my house. I'm sitting in my living room chair, and we put a black drape up and a flag behind it, a painting that I bought in D.C.
Mm-hmm.
And the photographer did a wonderful job. I was smoking, you know, a small blunt, and the smoke is wafting up, and he happened to capture it perfectly. There's no edit to that I know of.
Really?
And it's real. No, it's. I think he fixed the chair a little bit, but there's no other edits to that.
Okay.
He's a wonderful photographer. His name's Benjamin Foote. But it's really. It, I think it captures what we were going for. Something kind of classic, a little mysterious, you know, kind of gangster, little maybe a little Scarface, Mad Men, but it's powerful. And
it is.
I think that's what we were going for. That, you know, about a year ago, I met a consultant. You'll meet a million consultants if you ever run for office. They all want to be consultants for you. And this guy turned out to be a good friend of ours. And he said, Benjamin, all I want is for you to stand in front of an American flag and hold a beer. He said, that's your campaign.
Mm-hmm.
And it just seemed boring to me.
Right, right.
And so as we were setting up for this cannabis shoot, I thought of his words. And I said, well, maybe we can use a flag and a joint. And it just, it's perfect. And that's why it's on all the newspapers. It was on the front of Newsweek, it was on the High Times, we were on the web, the homepage, front and center, and it's worked, and, you know, it, not only because it's a great photo, but it's important, it's what people want to talk about, you know, cannabis is so important right now for medicine and for criminal justice reform and for taxes, and just because it's a great substance.
It is, and I do appreciate that as well, that, you know, listening to what you had to say in various interviews, reading things that were on your website about marijuana, what I liked is that it wasn't just like, I'm just doing it because I feel like smoking. I do appreciate the fact that there was a discussion about all the other tie-ins of, okay, but if weed was decriminalized, that would greatly improve standing of especially marginalized folks, poor folks, and non-white folks when it comes to police interactions, right? If you can't be stopped for having weed anymore, when it comes to people who use it for medical purposes, even new industries using hemp rope, hemp oil, you know, all these other things that come in. And it seems like so many folks are stuck under this, like, respectability politics. Like, we can't admit we like weed. We can't talk about weed. So it's so refreshing to hear somebody like, no, we're adults. We do adult things. Let's have an adult discussion about this topic, you know? Like,
I'm
like
finishing
that.
My PhD in a program that's called International Psychology. You know, and It's about culture and human rights and psychology. And I've learned a lot of things, but one thing really sticks out of my mind because they keep talking about it over and over with mental illness. Mental illness is still stigmatized in America. Mm-hmm. People are ostracized and isolated and stigmatized. And I think that's how the cannabis community feels. I really do. I feel like they've never been accepted. Mm-hmm. They've been isolated and ostracized, made fun of, and arrested. And now they have someone like me and a few others, of course, that mm-hmm. are really standing up for them and saying, this is a part of my life. I'm not hiding from you any longer. This is what we're doing, and this is where it's going. And let's be honest, cannabis will be legalized federally. There is no question. It's just a matter of time. There right. is billions of dollars of it flowing around through California and Colorado and D.C. and even, you know, the medical cannabis here in Illinois. And none of that is regulated. Mm-hmm. None of that. And that cannot last much longer. So if you look at just the timetable, it will end. It will be federally legalized within the next few years. And that is, I have a lot of things to work on. Universal healthcare is a big one. But right now, federally recognizing and legalizing cannabis will happen. And if I'm the person to do it, then wonderful. Someone else, great. But it will happen. Mm-hmm. And something really funny that's happened with all this cannabis talk is I'm getting so many emails, text messages, direct messages on all these different platforms that I'm not good at using, by the way, from mothers and grandfathers and people saying, this is medicine for me. I had to move to a different state to get medicine. My son had cancer, and this has helped his appetite and his pain control. And it's weird because I've never had to really acknowledge that. I know that as someone running for office, and I'm a smart person, I think big, but it's not until you're getting these emails from people where you can feel the emotion, and they're saying, my son is dying. Mm-hmm. And I want to help him without giving him Valium or opium, whatever the hell they give these people now that get them addicted to painkillers. Mm-hmm. These mothers and fathers and people want to give their loved ones cannabis.
Yeah.
And they can't do it. And mm-hmm. I just don't understand that. It's never killed anyone. It's natural and it's wonderful. And let's just do it. Legalize it, for God's sakes. And that is my new crusade right now, and if I can be the leader or the point man or just someone that's walking in the right direction unafraid, that's what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. It's been really exciting.
That sounds really amazing. And but now, are you a little bit like nervous or scared that, you know, when you get elected, a lot of people in Washington don't want to legalize? I mean, they should, but they don't want to. Are you a little bit nervous about bumping heads there?
I'm not at all concerned about that. Not at all. I think, again, like I said, it will be federally recognized and legalized. It's just a matter of time. And if I can be the voice of reason, you know, I was a diplomat. I know how to talk to people. Mm-hmm. I was a federal agent. I know about all the criminal justice issues. And so they can't lie to me. You can't twist ideas and lie to me about these things. And a lot of people try to do that. Mm-hmm. They did it with the automatic weapons. People are trying to say, well, that's not a machine gun or it's not an automatic. Don't give me definitions. Don't try to twist the words. Mm-hmm. This has to happen. It's going to happen. It's good for everyone. You know, just think of all the research and development money and all the money from hemp, and we can not chop down trees anymore. There's so much good. And I don't know where it went wrong. I'm not sure. I'm not a weed historian. I don't know. I think Nixon really just gave it this terrible name. That's where marijuana comes from. It's this derogatory term. Mm-hmm. That's why I use the term cannabis. I think it's more natural and more palatable. It makes it seem a little bit more sophisticated, perhaps. But it's happening, and there's so much to benefit and so much to gain. It's time to move forward. We need to evolve as Americans and evolve as humans to just get past this. And it mm-hmm. takes time, but I promise you we'll get there.
Yeah, I'm really excited, and I can't wait, honestly. I think it's excellent recreationally. I think it's safer than a lot of other substances that we can access, you know, probably safer in the long run. And I am really curious to see what we can do as far as innovation, using the whole plant for everything and anything. I am so excited for that, so I cannot wait for the day.
Somebody told me today that they can't even do experiments with cannabis because they can't buy it. Like, for instance, if there's a lab in Idaho that's trying to do medical research on cannabis and all the care it can give and the paint, whatever it is they do, they're smart scientists, but they can't even get it. They can't buy it. They can't bring it in the lab. They're so worried about it. So you're prohibiting research from happening on a plant because of some silly law. I can't accept that. There are a lot of things I can say, well, I understand that. I understand these things. This is no longer logical and no longer acceptable. And I think it's time for, you know, the cannabis community has been so supportive since we put these photos out. We talk about it loudly now. And boy, there's a lot of people. And you know what? There's a lot of Republicans that are coming out and saying it's a good thing, not just for tax purposes, but it's just the right thing to do.
Absolutely.
It's been really surprising.
Well, I mean, I think that overall the legislation around the whole topic is really just an act of cruelty for the most part. You know, denying people medication, locking people up for what should be an incredibly minor infraction, if an infraction at all. Just, you know, it seems so based on punishment and cruelty instead of looking at the potential benefits we could get out of this, you know? And I think that's something that's always disappointed me about the way so far things have been handled. But I'm ready for the change. I'm ready for that.
Well, here's the bad news. I was one of the bad guys for a long time. I was, you know, I was born into a really simple middle-class family. My parents were public school teachers, and from day one, I wanted to be a police officer, a military officer, and, you know, I knew that going in, so I never did any bizarre substances. I never smoked weed. I had roommates in college, you know, that just, they were selling drugs, all sorts of drugs, and it was just not something I wanted to do because I saw it as a limiting factor in my life if I wanted to work for the government later.
Okay.
So I was one of these people that's kind of not brainwashed, but just realized that, hey, it's illegal, I don't do it. And if you're doing it and it's illegal, you're the bad person, you're the bad guy.
Mm-hmm.
It was a very black and white world I lived in. And, you know, becoming a federal agent again, they send you to these academies and these training facilities, and you become a pretty stern, tough, aggressive, suspicious person, as you have to be in law enforcement.
Mm-hmm.
And it's taken me a while to shed that. It's taken me a while, and I talked about this the other day online. I think smoking cannabis has really helped me shed that. It's kind of shaped my brain differently. I think there's different chemicals in my brain all of a sudden.
Mm-hmm.
It's made me more understanding and more empathetic, and I think even a better father. And it allows me to just think more creatively and maybe four-dimensionally, if that's even a possibility. I think it's been really wonderful for me as a person, and it's helped me evolve as a human and as a man. And I'm really proud to say that, you know, I use cannabis, not every day, but regularly enough that it affects my life in so many positive ways.
Mm-hmm. Now, are you concerned that you're going to face any legal repercussions for admitting that?
Oh, never. No, never. I love civil disobedience. Always have. And if that's what this is, then I'm for, you know, I had an event last year on 420.
Uh-huh.
We met and we put it out all over social media. We had hundreds of people show up in Logan Square at the memorial there in the circle. And we had a huge smokeout, 420 smokeout. And the police were kind of there, but, you know, they don't care. Listen, it's a bunch of kids sitting in the grass smoking grass. Nobody cares. There's no violence. There's no problems. And honestly, the police in Chicago have much bigger problems, much, much more serious issues to contend with. And it was an incredible showing. The Sun-Times showed up in the Post and the Reader, and they, you know, they didn't really write up things like they should have. They should have talked about, you know, this wonderful act of civil disobedience put on by someone that's trying to be a leader in the community. They just didn't get it. I think the writer for the Reader of the Sun-Times, who's writing, she's the cannabis writer, just didn't seem happy to be there. And it was strange. It's like sending someone to write about restaurants who doesn't like food. She just wasn't very pleasant. So it didn't make any sense to me. Honestly, we're out there. It was a beautiful sunny day, and everyone's, you know, having, you know, smoking and playing music, and we had a wonderful time. And then the reporters showed up, and they were miserable.
Oh.
So, you know, from the very beginning, we've been pushing this, and this is an important thing to be doing and taking risks. And again, breaking the law, I'm fine with that. I don't imagine the police are going to kick in my door for, you know, a few ounces of weed, and they have bigger issues. They really do.
They do. So yeah, definitely pro weed. Now, some other things that I was looking on your website. I was looking at your platforms. There's some really, really good stuff here, I gotta say. something that I was really feeling was you were talking about equal pay, reproductive rights, and family leave. You support a one-year family leave for new parents?
I support an indefinite family leave for parents. I've worked, you know, it is, again, bizarre to me and unacceptable to the point that women after pregnancy get 2 weeks or 6 weeks or whatever it is here in America. Mm-hmm. I lived overseas in places where the women, after giving birth, didn't have to come back to work for a year. And when they came back part-time, and they had time with their families. I think family leave is an incredibly important thing. I have three small boys, mm-hmm. and I just can't imagine not having a parent at home to help raise them. And I think it borders on neglect when you have to go back to work and you're taking your kid to like daycare. And people have to do that because they have to work. But mm-hmm. my goodness, wouldn't it be nice if, you know, corporations and the government said, you know, let's give women more time at home with their newborns. It is so important. That is the most important time for a child, for an infant, for a baby, to have some attachment. And that influences you for years. And I just think that we can do so much better on a human level. It's really, mm-hmm. The American government is doing things just backwards. And I think we're slowly moving in the right direction, but it's going to take some jostling, if that's the right word.
Definitely.
Some fighting.
Yeah, and I think that there's lower rates of postpartum depression in women that have more support services, right? And more family leave and things like that. So I think in the long term, that's just a really good way to go. It's smart, you know?
Yeah, and it's not even just mothers. It's fathers. I think fathers are up forgotten. Anyway, as mm-hmm. a father, I never felt forgotten. But I think that there are some that feel that way. You know, fathers should be able to spend as much time at home as possible also. And mm-hmm. you know, there's a lot of single-parent families out there these days. And there's got to be a way for them to keep some income, you know, rolling through, and also be able to spend time with their newborn children. I think again, there is opportunity there. No more 6 weeks. I think we go for mm-hmm. 6 months to a year. I think it's very fair.
That sounds like a fantastic idea. And then of course, your environmental stance. I was liking that as well. Ending fracking, using renewable energy. Yes. Be a little more green.
You know, that, again, just sounds so normal. That's what everyone should want. We should want to protect the earth and the environment. I grew up in a small town in Ohio. I just communed with nature every day. I was outside running and playing in trees and forests and lakes. Mm-hmm. I grew up on Lake Erie, like literally grew up on it. My father had an old rickety boat. So every weekend in the summer, we would go up there and, you know, the remnants of my childhood is these sights and smells and the lake and the grass, and to know that we are dumping chemicals into the Great Lakes still today. Mm-hmm. And that is 20% of the Earth's surface water, like the like clean drinking water, mm-hmm. 20%. And we're dumping chemicals into our drinking water knowingly. And again, that just, it's unacceptable. So one of the other things we talk about a lot is protecting the Great Lakes. And, mm-hmm. you know, all of these states, the contiguous states that touch the Great Lakes, all of these Congress people and senators and everyone should really be fighting for this. It provides, you know, recreation and water and natural resources and scenery and tourism. If those are ever polluted to the point they can't be used anymore, I can't imagine what the United States would be like without them. They provide so many resources and clean drinking water. I don't know where you go from there. These are things that we need to start thinking on a global level and a bigger level and start thinking about our connection to the earth and how humans interact with the environment. And I think, you know, I learned this from one of our staffers as an environmentalist. We need to start examining, you know, our connection and how we view the planet as a species, mm-hmm. because what we're doing is no longer fair or right and no longer acceptable. We're harming not just ourselves, but so many thousands of species. I saw something online the other day that 10, 20, 100 species go extinct every day.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And it's hard to wrap your head around that. But we're doing so much damage, and don't even get me started on fracking, please.
Oh, and that I think is something that astounds me is I'm with you. Like, that should be normal. We shouldn't be fracking. We shouldn't be polluting. We shouldn't be, you know, dumping chemicals. And I, sometimes remain just astounded that that's not everybody's stance, you know?
I don't know what the defense to that is. I don't know how you positively portray fracking other than, well, we're using natural gas, not having to use it from Saudi Arabia. Well, let's just not use natural gas. Let's find renewable energy or electricity or solar. You're plunging chemicals into the drinking water and into the earth. And I don't know if they're causing earthquakes or I'll talk about that, but there's clearly some problems with that. Mm-hmm. And these corporations have these ironclad contracts. And if you sing about it, you're sued and they steal your farm. And there's so many just horrible stories surrounding this. I don't know why it exists other than, again, large corporations and companies. And I'm not vilifying corporations. I own a restaurant. I'm a corporation. But when you have so much money and power and you're able to manipulate people, like these little farmers, mm-hmm. and people in rural America that don't have $10,000 and you're offering them $200,000, you know what they're going to say.
Right.
And then you're starting fights within the cities and the neighbors, and you're destroying communities and the planet. Boy, that's... Again, you're making me very angry. Let's talk about something fun.
Okay.
anything else but destroying my planet. I can't
yes.
take it anymore.
All right. Do you want to talk about your AR-15 video?
Sure. I think all the school shootings just really, again, shook me. I have kids, and they come home, and they tell me that they have these active shooter drills. Mm-hmm. And again, I grew up in Ohio. We had tornado drills, and I swear that scared the hell out of me.
Mm-hmm.
There's only one thing in the world I'm afraid of, and it's tornadoes, still to this day. The only thing, I will admit that. But my kids come home, they have these active shooter drills, and they talk about it a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And I finally got fed up, and I said, you know what, we need to talk about this publicly, and I have an AR-15 at my disposal. I have friends that live in the suburbs. You can buy them out there. And mm-hmm. I was holding this weapon, and our film guy came over, and he said, okay, I said, just turn the camera on. I'm just going to talk about this.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm holding the AR-15, and I start talking about the different components. And I talk about the fact that this is the exact same model of weapon I carried in Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
And some people say, well, it's an AR-15, not an M4, not an M16. I don't care. It's the same style of weapon. It's an assault rifle, no question. It's a military-made, military-designed, military-manufactured weapon designed to kill dozens of people. Not for hunting, it's not for collecting, it's not for money. It's for killing humans, and apparently children now. And it has optics that allow you to shoot someone from a mile away. It has a 30-round magazine filled with bullets that travel faster than the speed of sound. And don't just go into the human body, they go right through it. And they destroy your organs. And I just don't think we should be selling those to teenagers. Call me crazy, but here I am holding this weapon in this commercial, and it's the same weapon I carried in Iraq in a war zone.
Mm-hmm.
And now children are buying it and taking it into schools and killing other children. And I was really angry when I was talking about it, and I think that was portrayed in the video. And I think it's more powerful. I think people need to know that I have experience with this weapon. I was trained on this weapon for years. Mm-hmm. I carried it for years. And for me to have that experience and tell people publicly, this is not appropriate to be sold in the civilian world. It is simply not. And I know there are millions of them out there, but eventually, again, there has to be a point where we say stop.
Right.
I'm not saying go pull weapons out of people's homes. We're not pulling people out of their beds and stealing their guns. But they need to be... The manufacturing has to stop, and the sales have to stop. There has to be a point when this stops. And I don't know when that is. I would love for the momentum with all these students to just pile up and pile up and vote everyone out of office. The problem is, I'll be very honest with you, what the students are doing and what everyone is doing is calling their congressperson
mm-hmm.
and their state rep. Don't call your congressperson or your state rep. Go find the guy running against him or the lady running against him or the transgender person running against them. Find somebody new and support a new candidate.
Mm-hmm.
You call your congressman, you're just putting that name in their head even more. You'll vote for them again. Do not vote for incumbents. Find a local candidate that you like and that you support and work with them. whether it's you donating $5 or you go and volunteering for a few hours on the weekend, like we ask people to do. Mm-hmm. That's how you implement change. Obama said, don't boo, vote. Well, I'm going to one-up him. Don't just vote. That's the basic responsibility. Find someone you identify with and help them. Running for office is the hardest thing I've ever done. I mean that. I don't mean like hard. I mean like this has been a grueling 2 years. And remember, I served in Iraq. I lived in Africa. I've endured real just hardship at times. Mm-hmm. This beats that times 10. It is the toughest thing. There are no days off. There's no pay. It is constant. You know, the feedback is not always great, as you can imagine.
Yes.
Especially in this city.
I've seen your Twitter threads.
you've seen it. But when people show up on weekends, I walk in and I have the biggest smile on my face. And I say, oh my God, they're still coming. They're still showing up. And a woman yesterday walked over to me and she said, I just want you to know I voted for you. And that changed everything. That was the most wonderful feeling I've had in years. It means that what we're doing is working and we're connecting with people and they believe in what we're doing and that there is hope. And there's, they believe that there is there's an alternate to what's happening and they're looking for new leaders and they're voting for me. Mm-hmm. And that is incredibly powerful.
And speaking of your campaign, I believe that it's a very grassroots campaign. There's not a lot of corporate backing, right?
Not even just corporate backing, any backing. If you pull our FEC filing, you would never imagine we could win this race. We have, I think we've taken in less than $50,000 in donations.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I have a deal that I basically, anytime somebody donates, I match it.
Uh-huh.
Just to make it fair. Just because if I don't put in, then, you know, I don't feel good about it.
Mm-hmm.
And what's going to be really amazing about this is if we win this election with less than $50,000,
mm-hmm.
it changes elections nationwide.
Absolutely.
Because then people can say, he did it. Mm-hmm. They did it in Chicago against an incumbent. And you know how they did it? With hard work.
Mm-hmm.
We get down on our hands and knees. And we take kids' colored sidewalk chalk, and we write on the sidewalks, Wolf for Congress. And we've been doing it for 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And tens of thousands of people have seen it. And then they get it in their head, and then they think about it, and they talk about it, and they wonder what it is. And then they Google Wolf for Congress, and our website pops up.
Mm-hmm.
And then we talk to them again, and we see them at a festival, at the Wicker Park Fest, or the Apple Cider Fest, or somewhere canvassing door-to-door. Or maybe they see a billboard, or maybe they see an ad or something on Facebook, and it just becomes familiar to them. And it's through that sheer repetition and hard work that we might actually win this election.
And just a reminder, letting folks know, we said check is FEC, that's the Federal Elections Commission.
Yep.
All right, continue on.
Yes. Now.
Exactly.
Now,
they're the people that govern money in politics. Clearly not doing a great job.
No.
There are rules.
They are not, which I was going to ask. So does that mean that if you get in, is that maybe something you would consider as a possible legislation, tightening something on the FEC or doing something about the massive amount of corporate money in politics? Is that a bill you might get behind or maybe even draft?
It is. You know, I think corporate donations in politics or anything for that matter shouldn't be happening. And let me be the first to admit that I didn't understand what corporate finance reform means. It's this term people use. And it doesn't mean anything to anybody, really, until you run for office.
Mm-hmm.
And then you start to get it real fast. Because imagine, if I don't have money, I don't have an office, I don't have volunteers, I don't have flyers. I started with nothing in our kitchen, basically.
Mm-hmm.
If you have money, you can put up signs and get flyers and send out mailers. You can immediately start paying staff. And then you can get all these fancy Facebook posts and all the things that a campaign is, and phones and phone banking. I challenge anybody to do this with no money and just by inspiring and leading other people to come to them. It's like forming a cult. Somehow you have to get into their head and convince them that this is the right thing to do. And I like to think that's just that, that's having a good background and being a good person and being able to manage and lead people. Mm-hmm. But this campaign finance reform, it's a mess. The fact that a corporation can donate $500,000 to a campaign, man, it's put you at such a disadvantage. Mm-hmm. And there's one story that I think really sums that up. I don't know if you're familiar with Zephyr Teachout. She's kind of a famous lady. She ran up in upstate New York, and she was a pretty progressive lady, and she was a teacher and a human rights lawyer, just the perfect candidate, you would think. And Bernie Sanders went and literally tapped her on the shoulder and said, "This is who we want to represent us in Congress." Mm-hmm. And she was instantly famous. And, you know, the election was coming down to the wire, and all of a sudden, a gentleman in Texas, uh-huh, with oil money, I think, donated $500,000 to her Republican rival.
Oh. Oh.
And she lost. So it's money, and it can come from anywhere. And she was clever about it. She said she saw the donation coming in, and she said, "Well, you know, I want a debate, and I don't want it with my opponent. I want it with the guy from Texas that just donated all that money. Mm-hmm. I want to know what you know about our community and what you know about New York and why you would donate this money. What is your rooting in this community that you would want to do such a thing?" Mm-hmm. And, of course, he didn't show up. But the campaign finance reform is real, and it's hard. And people – the problem is when you get into office, mm-hmm, it's very easy then to start accepting – $10,000 from General Electric. You know, my opponent takes a lot of money from corporations. Mm-hmm. You know, the Boeing is near the airport, and, you know, O'Hare Airport's in the district. And, oh, well, there's a couple other corporations, and they need legislation. And if they give you money, I don't care what they say, you are beholden to them. If you give me $5, I'm still going to owe you something somewhere. There's a little piece of guilt. Mm-hmm. And that's what it is. You're buying access. You're buying something. But when you're giving somebody $5,000, $10,000, $50,000, that gets you access to their office immediately. You don't even stop at the receptionist. You walk right into the congressman or congressperson's office, and you say, "I need this now." Mm. And you better believe you're going to get it. Money speaks, and it speaks loudly in Washington. And it's a real problem for me.
And so, like, to be more accurate, right, they call it a donation, but, I mean, these are business people that want return on investment. So I think it seems like they're more so investing than donating.
That's a great way of saying it. You're right. You're investing in having access to someone. And, you know, Democrats are no different. These unions are the same way. I was a union person. I like unions and collective bargaining and job security and job safety. It's great, but they're the same thing. They're the opposite of the corporations, though. They give money, and then they have influence. They want laws passed, and it's the same thing. It's just that Republicans get a lot of corporate money, Democrats get union money. But it's, you know, there's a model in the UK, and every time you talk about models for healthcare or anything else from another country, people's minds shut off. Mm-hmm. But in the UK, they get 90 days to campaign, and that's it. And the government gives them, I think it's like, we'll say $50,000. And that's all you get. And there's a couple debates, and it's organized, and the winner wins, and that's it. And what a nice system that is, to have an even playing field, a couple televised debates, and give people inform the voters, versus just my opponent having $1 million and buying 1 million billboards. You're like, yeah, I feel like I've seen that name. And it's congressional campaigns, Senate campaigns, they're just, what do I say? They're popularity contests.
Yes.
Whose name do you remember? Mm-hmm. And you remember the guy whose sign was outside or billboard because they had more money to pay for those things. Or the commercials are big. I'm sitting home watching the 9 o'clock news, and the commercials come on. Oh, Wolf. I keep seeing Wolf, 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 Wolf. All right, I'm going to vote for that guy. Mm-hmm.
Which
is probably the wrong guy to vote for. He's getting corporate money, so don't vote for him.
Mm.
But it's name recognition. It's a popularity contest. It's not about skill or leadership or credentials or service. It's sadly about money.
Mm-hmm.
We're trying to get away from that, and we're using hard work and good people and kindness and compassion. And I hope that my public record speaks to people, too, and just, you know, what we're doing and how hard we're working. We're trying to upend the whole system. And it's hard. It's It may not work, but I'm telling you what, we're putting up one hell of a fight.
Absolutely. And I think you're absolutely right with that, that the name recognition does make it a popularity contest. And unfortunately, people vote by what names they remember, not what policies they prefer, regrettably.
And let me tell you, the ace in the hole, if you will, is when you're a congressperson or you're in office, even an alderman. I think, let's stay with Congress because I know for sure this is true. There's something called the franking privilege. Whatever. It was probably a law that was passed in 1912. I don't know when it was. But it said that Congress people get to send out free mail. And it's supposed to be telling you, you know, from back in the 1912, we didn't have computers. Mm-hmm. It allowed you to transmit to your constituents what was happening in Washington. Well, today we're voting to build the railroads. Today we're voting to pass this, whatever it is. Well, now they use it to campaign. So they're getting free mail to everyone in the district, every single voter, every single resident and house. And they're getting that anytime they want. I don't know if there's a limit or not, but the government is then paying for their campaign. Oh. It's not supposed to say Wolf for Congress, but it will say Wolf on it in real big letters with a big glossy stamp and a picture of me smiling holding a baby. And it's the whole system. God, I sound like a conspiracy theorist. The whole system is stacked against new people. You know, running for Congress, when you go against an incumbent, your chances of winning are 4%.
Huh.
Probably less than that.
Wow.
Because the system is so much in favor of the incumbent. My opponent had $1 million in the bank from the day we started. I had started with zero. He started with $1 million. He has a consulting firm that runs his campaign. He has a staff in D.C., and here in the district that just do his bidding. So imagine the disadvantage we're at. And I'm out there scribbling in sidewalk chalk on the ground. Mm-hmm. It's ludicrous. But I think that we've overcome that. I think we're now at the point where it's 50-50.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and we get volunteers and we get last-minute support in the next 3 weeks. And if anybody's listening, or if anybody will listen to this, and, you know, we would love your support. Come to our campaign office. It's at 2048 West Chicago Avenue. Intersection near Damon in Chicago. We're out every week in canvassing. During the day, we're in the office for a little bit doing admin work and press, and then we go out for a bit. Just come say hello. Mm-hmm. Just come say hi. And off, you know, 1 hour of your time means the world to me. An hour of going door to door, handing out flyers and talking to constituents or residents or voters. It means the world to me. Little things like that. I don't want people's money. Mm-hmm. I want your time. I'm recruiting you to work on our campaign. That's what we ask.
Yeah, and it's there's no conspiracy theory to it. They put it through the system. Citizens United, McCutcheon decision, America in general.
Yep. Yeah, it's definitely not a conspiracy. It's very real. Yeah.
Yeah, but again, you got to look at who's making those laws. It's Congress. You know. They're making laws that, again, benefit the corporations that are giving them donations. You know, it's the Supreme Court, it's the Supreme Court. But if it's Congress making these laws, again, the whole system is wrong. Money in politics is not good. It took me a long time to understand that. It's really not until you're running for office where you're like, wow, it would be really great to have an office for free. Mm-hmm. Or a staff or some new flyers or anything. A designer. It's constant work. It's you're out every day. It's brutal, but it's the most rewarding and the most important thing that I can possibly be doing. And other people, I have immediate respect for people, and they say they've run for office, or they're thinking about it, or they actually do it. But very few people will actually go through and do it well. So it's an undertaking. So I also. You know, think long and hard before you do this. But it is the most rewarding thing in the world when you have that one person come up and say, you know, I voted for you. I like what you stand for. I like this or I like that. Or even if I just don't like your opponent, I'm okay with that too. Boy, it's an amazing feeling.
All right. Now, you have more stuff down in your pad?
I don't know. Do we want to go to fun stuff? The questions and the...
Yeah. Yeah, a couple of folks.
Sorry, I'm plugging my phone and what I meant.
A few people were watching the Facebook Live and asking some silly questions in the thread. If you want to do some silly question time.
You know what? I love silly questions. We were going to do a Benjamin Reed's mean tweet one of these nights, but we don't have a lot of time. Like, yeah, any silly question. I'll take any question.
You should do the reading mean tweets, because I got mean tweets because I said you were going to come on the podcast. So read the mean tweets. That's
a good
thing.
Yeah, we have tons of haters. I love it.
Yes.
You know, it's funny. We have, I think the minute you step into any public office or any public service, I think you have immediate, you know, trolls and haters. But, my opponent has a consulting firm that just digs at us all the time. It's wasteful. It gives us more attention. The minute you say, Wolf, I love you, the minute, I don't care if it's bad or good or what it is, it's wonderful. So, I don't give them much time. We block a lot of it just to leave it alone. But, you know, they don't understand that they're actually making us more popular, whether it's good or bad. It's a funny system. One day they'll understand that.
And by the way,
I like silly questions. So go for it.
Folks who are watching live, and if you have more silly questions, add them. Do you listen to rap music?
Do I listen to rap music? Mm-hmm. I listen to all music. You know, I'm not... I'll be really honest, I'm not a real good pop culture guy. I haven't had a TV in almost 15 years.
What?
And you also have to remember, I spent most of the last 15 years overseas or working in really strange places. And I missed out on so much music and TV and great movies. I don't know a lot of the movie quotes I should. Somebody was quoting The Simpsons today and I didn't get it. I missed out on so much. And I'm a lot older than you, so I don't know. I remember, you know, Public Enemy and things like that. That's my generation.
Yeah, that'll work with this audience. Public Enemy.
It's one of my big weaknesses. I really want to do better, but I have a phone and I use Spotify playlists, and it's usually relaxing music when I'm stoned at night doing work late at night. Uh-huh. I don't listen to a ton of really. Not too much variety of music these days. But why? What should I be listening to? I love,
Well, they asked who your ideas. Well, someone asked who your five favorite MCs are, but you might not be able to answer that.
Oh my goodness.
So we might just give you five recommendations.
Yeah, I would love that, because this will be a really long evening for me if you make me start naming albums or music or records or anything. It won't go well for me. I'll lose a lot of voters.
No.
That's the opposite of what was supposed to happen.
Yeah, we don't want that. He came on the show and it was horrible. It was just terrible. Everyone stopped listening and they voted against him because he didn't know music. I wondered about that. What's funny is I thought about that. I was like, I know they're going to ask me about music. I know it. I should go on and start researching music. But you know what? I wasn't going to do that. I'm not going to. I couldn't mislead you.
Definitely.
I have Netflix, and I'm amazed by that. You have to remember the phone number that I have here was my pager number back in the day with my old FBI pager number. So my old iPhones amaze me. Netflix stupefies me. Like, I can watch anything I want at any moment and pause it. I can watch 12 episodes of Game of Thrones on a Saturday. I mean, the technology today, it's overwhelming. It's incredible, and it's liberating. But boy, is it, it's overwhelming.
You said pager.
Yeah, that was true.
Yeah, I know.
My God.
Yeah, I had a pager. I carried a pager with the FBI, guys. I'm 42. We had pagers back then.
Yeah,
that was a phase. That was a thing that did happen. Yes,
it was a big deal to have a pager. Listen, you used to have to go to payphones or home phone, and you got a pager, and you get a pager. You'd have to still go to the payphone to figure out what was going on. It was horrible. Yes. It was a terrible system.
I remember that.
And then
that people
text pagers came along, and we thought that was great. And boy, we didn't know what was going on until BlackBerry showed up.
Oh, we'll see, people in the comment section are laughing because everyone there is also old enough to have had a pager. Well, almost everyone.
All right, well, good.
I think one person is not. Pager era.
I'm not alone. It was a pager era. It was a dark time. It was. Payphones, man. The beeping, the vibrating, it wasn't good. It was not enjoyable.
Okay, now this one on black popular culture, this one is important. If someone asks you if this character was right, Killmonger was right. This is very important.
You got to repeat that again. I don't even know. Are you speaking English?
Yep.
What was the question?
It's not a question. It's an answer. If someone asks you if Killmonger was right, yes, Killmonger was right. It's from the movie Black Panther, and Killmonger was essentially the working class person who, as hastily as this person wanted to act and whatever he wanted to run over in his path, this was the by any means necessary, let's use the class privileged people and what they have to liberate the laboring class. Killmonger
was right. Recently in the recent Black Panther movie, because I just saw that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes. How did I miss this term? How did I miss... Oh. You know what? That was a long movie. Let me just say that. That was a long movie. I don't think I fell asleep, but I was lost because there was two bad guys, and that confuses someone like me. You know, I'm used to the old school 80s movies where you have a good guy and a bad guy and they fight and the good guy wins. This had the guy with the arm, the robot arm, right?
Yeah, that was Clow. He was definitely wrong.
So there was
wrong.
One bad guy, and then something happened to him. I don't remember what happened. Well, and then the other guy showed up, his kid or the cousin or the nephew showed up.
That's Killmonger.
That was another bad guy.
Yeah.
You got to remember, I'm a simple man. That was a tough movie to follow, and it was long. It was late, and I'm old. But it was clever. It was in. You know, I lived in Africa for years, and I love seeing the heritage and the language and the outfits and the cultural nuances of it. It was beautiful. It's a 2.5 hour long superhero movie, which is always fun. But the costume design and the time that they put into the decoration was fabulous, and I hope they win a bunch of Oscars, if nothing else, then for, you know, costume design and details like that, because that not only cost them a fortune, but, you know, some anthropologists and archaeologists and cultural psychologists spent a lot of time and energy on that, and it was beautiful.
Where were you at in Africa?
So I lived in Senegal for 2 years. I lived in Algeria for 2 years, and I was kind of regional around that area for a lot longer. So I was in the Middle East and Africa for most of my State Department career.
Okay.
Yeah, which is beautiful. I thought it was magical. Africa is a wonderful, romantic place, coupled with very challenging situations. You know, mm-hmm. They say they have wonderful people, terrible governments. But it's one of the most interesting and diverse and radical and beautiful and ugly places. And when, you know, this idiot president of ours said something really terrible about Africa and third world countries or developing countries, you know, I took that really personally.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my kid's mother is South African, and to insult then my children and my family and all the people that we knew and all the people we know, I don't tolerate that stuff. I have a hard time with that, especially when he's clearly never lived there. He's never been there. He doesn't know the culture of the people.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think he realizes what he said and how misinformed he is.
Probably not. But he probably doesn't care either.
Probably not. No. No. No, probably not.
Okay. Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, I listened to Donald Trump talk, and it really is like a... It's very similar to when I would hear Sarah Palin talk, where it's like, I'm pretty sure you're just freestyling and you have no idea what you're talking about.
Well, as much as I hate on that man and as much grief as everybody gives him, he did something right. And I don't know if that is just pure luck or stupidity or because he was willing to do and say things other people weren't, but it's the one thing, and he is in the White House, and it's... Let me say this. There is a silver lining there. With all the misery, you know, he's chopping away at these amazing institutions, State Department, the FBI, and he's destroying everything we once held sacred. But there's a silver lining there. People are standing up. More people are running for office. Mm-hmm. People are activated and organizing, and it's really, it's amazing. People are paying attention for the first time, and you know, we have a malicious man in the White House. We've never seen that. Mm-hmm. At least that's what my grandmother says. She's older than me. She said, we've never seen this before. And I love that fact that, you know, people are challenging him, and this resistance, it's a real thing. It's not just a term or a hashtag or something. It's a real thing, and I'm proud to be a part of that. You fight or you don't fight, and I'm a fighter, and I'm really proud to be, you know, having a campaign staff. You know, our job is to fight against the things we don't like, and to fight against whether it's the Republicans or the ideas or the presidents. You know, you have to have an enemy, and he's, you know, he's in our crosshairs right now, for lack of a better term. And I, you know, everything we do, he gives us more fuel, and he gives us more volunteers. The minute he says something stupid, another volunteer shows up in our office. So I'm almost rooting for him to say more dumb things.
No, he
so
has...
there's that silver lining. I think you're going to see, you know, I just hope that some of these new candidates win. This is my great concern, is if I don't win and a lot of these other new progressive Democrats or whatever you want to call them, these new candidates don't win, it's going to be really tough on all of us to know that the system can't be beaten. You know, very few newcomers will enter Congress. The idea of Democrats flipping the House in 2018 is almost zero. It's going to be very challenging. Mm-hmm. But if, you know, just a few of these young, new, vibrant leaders win, it gives us a lot of hope. And if they don't, it's going to be just morally very challenging for us, crushing. Mm-hmm. To know that, boy, you know, Nancy Pelosi will never be beat. Schumer and all these people that have been there for decades, 30, 40 years. These are 85-year-old men and women trying to represent us. And I don't think that's reasonable anymore. You know, the initial idea was that you would go to Washington, you'd be elected. You'd go to Washington for a few years, 2 years, 3 years, 5 years, maybe. And you would come home a better citizen, more informed, and just a better person, more evolved. It was never designed for you to go there and stay for 50 years. It's wrong. It's holding us back.
Man, and something else that, like, that'll make it really tough is, you know, what we have coming up. And I've been ever since I started this podcast in 2012, I've been everyone, whenever you're talking about the politics and why you want to get out there and vote and get your person in, is because the district redrawing is coming up. You know, like 2010 was when they did the last one, and it's coming up in 2020, and you want your folks in when it's time to make those districts again.
Yeah, I think that's at the state level, if I'm not mistaken. I think a lot of that is done at the state level, and that's when the gerrymandering comes in and the district lines. And, you know, I'm not a specialist in that, because all I know is, you know, to be honest, we don't even have a good map of our district. There is no perfect map, which is strange to me. I'm running for office for the 5th district, and there's not even a really good map anywhere. We went down to City Hall, we went to DuPage County, we went to Cook County. There's no detailed map. So if I don't know where the boundaries of my own district are, how effective can I be, and how effective can a campaign be? And again, that's part of the problem. I don't know if they need to be big squares. I don't know if that's the way to do it, but I think what there is now is, again, it's these lines and strange shapes that are impossible to navigate. So, you're right. You not only want your guys in, but just to vote. People just need to be voting. You want to hear a really sad statistic? I'm going to tell you anyway. I think it was 2016, maybe 2014, the last non-presidential primary. So the election coming up is the primary, right? It's where we determine which Democrat goes against which Republican. There are 715,000 people in each district, give or take. 715,000. Mm-hmm. Wyoming has only 1 million people, so they only have one representative in Congress, which is interesting. So in this district, the 5th district of Illinois, one of the youngest, the most progressive, impressive, smartest, most educated. There are 715,000 people. Only 900 people under 40 voted.
Really?
900 people under 40 voted.
That's not a lot of people.
That should make you very upset. And that is why we are talking to a lot of young people. And mm-hmm. I don't mean just young. I mean under 40 is young. Because what happens is the incumbents, they go to the senior home. They go to the older people. And they've been on the ballot for a long time. And the old people recognize their names. They feel safe doing that. Mm-hmm. We are trying to motivate and inspire young people to vote. If young people voted, you can quote me on this. If young people voted, they could have anything they wanted. Anything they want. If young people vote, they can vote all new congressmen, state rep, senators into office that want to ban assault weapons. It could be done in 2018 and 2020. The whole House, the whole Senate, everything could change. When you were 17, did you vote? Not a chance.
Wow. So,
not a chance.
Now, do you think that not just your campaign, but campaigns in general are really tapping into younger voters and they're getting somewhere with it?
We're going to find out on March 20th. We're going to find out.
Yes.
We have been in places like Wicker Park and mm-hmm. Bucktown and Ravenswood and all of these places with vibrant young people, Lakewood, Lincoln Park, Wrigleyville, explaining how important this is. And people keep telling me, Benjamin, don't be an idealist. They're not going to vote. They're not going to vote.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to find out. We've spent a year at festivals talking to young people on the streets. And we're going to find out if they vote. If they vote, we win. If they don't, I don't stand a chance.
So now,
find out.
Well, how can people help your campaign? What can they do?
That's my favorite question. Just show up. We have a campaign office, again, at 2048 West Chicago Avenue, Chicago and Damon, across from Mariano's. You'll see our logo and my big dumb face on the windows. Just show up. Just walk in. We're there every evening from 6 to 8. We have office hours every day now from 6 to 8. There's only 3 weeks till the election. And on weekends, we're out canvassing, literally going door to door, talking to neighbors, talking to community, going to grocery stores, handing out these little blue flyers that say Wolf for Congress, a picture of me and my dog in the back, and reminding people to vote. And like I said, if they just show up,
mm-hmm.
you know, think about it. It doesn't sound like a lot, but when we canvass on a Saturday, I'll go to 200 houses.
Mm-hmm.
And if I have 10 people doing that, that's 2,000 people. That's
right.
2,000 houses, plus the spouses. Maybe there's kids in there that can vote. Thousands of people we reach every week, every day. Mm-hmm. Thousands. And one person, they're force multipliers, as we say. They can go to more people, and then they get involved, and then they share a Facebook post, and maybe we get a couple donations. And then they show up again, and they keep talking about it. Martin Luther King was able to get 1 million people to march on Washington, D.C., and he didn't have a Facebook page. That is a very important thing to remember. They used flyers and leaflets and word of mouth. Word of mouth is incredibly powerful. Mm-hmm. If I came up to you at a bar, if we knew each other on the street, and I said, hey, listen, there's a guy named Benjamin Thomas Wolf. He was a good person. He wants to legalize cannabis. He was an FBI guy. He's a diplomat. Wolf, remember that and vote for him. You probably would.
Mm-hmm.
Or you would at least look it up.
Mm-hmm.
Word of mouth is incredibly powerful. And I hope people just talk about our campaign. That's what we're asking for. But really, we love volunteers. Show up. Be a part of this. It's exciting and it's fun. Our campaign staff, we've all become really good friends. One of my biggest fears is losing. I'm going to lose all my friends.
Aww.
These are good people. Yeah, I know. I worry about that. Like, we've given people a community and an identity and a mission. And to lose is going to be really tough on all of us. You know, people ask me, what are you going to do if it doesn't go well? I'm probably going to go join the Peace Corps and go back to Africa. I'm going to go back to my roots and be a public servant again
mm-hmm.
and do something, you know, that where I'm really needed. I love teaching and I love Chicago, but I'll need a year or two to go lick my wounds and write a book.
Yeah.
And you know what, folks? Like, going out there and volunteering, like right now, with climate change, it's warm out there. So you'll have a good time.
Ah.
That's true.
Well, it's not warm, but it's warmer. We were out on Super Bowl Sunday in the snow, knocking on doors. And I think we get a little sympathy. We get some sympathy votes out of that. So that's not a bad thing. But let me tell you something else about Illinois. Illinois has one of the earliest primaries, which means the new people like me have to campaign through the winter. Mm-hmm. Most primaries are in the summertime, or you have the spring and the summer to campaign. Illinois, am I allowed to say, am I allowed to use profanity on this?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, we cuss a lot on this show.
I'm not going to say it, but Illinois is screwed up. It really is. It is designed, the system is designed to screw new people.
Yep.
You have to campaign through the winter. Go look at the primary dates for every state. Texas has theirs, I think, March 5th. Remember, in Texas, it's warm. Then us, and then everyone else is in the summer in July and August. It's screwed up. And that's your state legislature, your state senate. That's the whole system. It's designed to screw new people. It's abominable what is going on in this state. And we keep losing people. Everyone's moving to Colorado and to California because they think there's better opportunity. If we are able to elect new officials, people will stay. Mm-hmm. I promise you, people will stay. This should be the best city in America. Period. Yeah. Period. Not New York, not L.A., Chicago should be the best city in America, no question. But people are leaving. We have a negative growth rate. Our taxes are astronomical because of just 5 decades of mismanagement and corruption. Mm-hmm. And people have lost faith. People have lost faith in the system and the leadership. And if new people like myself are elected, man, what a change it could be. People will really start to believe the system works. We can get good new elected officials, and I'm going to stay here. This is my home. Mm-hmm. That's what we're going for.
You know what? That's pretty legit. I think we can wrap it up there. Like any closer?
Closing statement.
Yes.
Please vote. I don't even care if you vote for me. I just want voter turnout high. We want to know that people care, that people can take a few minutes out of their day to go to the library or wherever your polling station is. If you have any questions about it, Google Wolf for Congress. On our website, on the engagement page, there's a whole section devoted to voting, and you can click on Chicago, Cook, or DuPage County, and you'll be able to see where to vote. It pulls up, you know, Cook County Board of Elections, whatever. Mm-hmm. If you really want to get generous, come support a campaign. Not even ours, anybody's. It means the world to me when new people show up at our campaign office. It takes a lot of guts to walk into a campaign office. But when they show up, it means the world to us. So please vote. If you want to vote Wolf, that would be amazing. We would love it. You know, we've been working really hard, and we think that we are, you know, I think that I am capable and ready to lead this city, you know, the district and one day the nation. And we just need people to believe in what we're doing and to actually take just the smallest bit of action and vote. You know, you hear the term democracy is a verb. Mm-hmm. So let's do it. Let's get out there and be a part of it and be active and vote. So that's my closing line. So I want to say thank you so much. It's been really interesting, the conversation, but you know, interacting with you over the internet or whatever mechanism we were using. Mm-hmm. You know, I listened to some of your shows, and I apologize if this wasn't quite as rowdy as they normally are. And my pop culture is not nearly as good as it should be. I believe me, I knew that was going to come up tonight, and I'm so embarrassed.
Oh no, it's all in fun.
You know, I'll work on it. You know, I'll take recommendations. How's that sound?
We are hip-hop purists, so we don't actually ever expect anyone to know what we listen to. So, it's just more of a fun... It's really just a fun question. There is no right answer.
Good. I would love recommendations. Like I said, at night, I smoke cannabis. I fool around with our website. I walk my dog, and we could use some good music in this house. So please make recommendations.
Yeah. Link them to Talib Kweli.
Yes, I will start you with some Talib Kweli. Yes. Now, where can folks find you on social media? You have a website. I know I originally found you on Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
What else? Mm-hmm. What else do you have?
I think the website is where I want people to go.
Okay.
Twitter is great. Facebook is cool. Instagram has pictures of me and my dog. But really, go to the website. Everything is right there. Right now, there's a giant picture of me smoking a joint. But we'll take that down the next few days with a little bit. We'll put some more details up.
Okay.
But yeah, everything should really be funneled to the website. And from there, you can find our social media links. But really, it's about knowing when and where to vote.
Okay.
So that's where we want people to go.
Excellent.
But yeah, Wolf for Congress, Benjamin Thomas Wolf, running for the 5th District of Illinois, the United States Congress. So again, thank you so much for having me on. I love podcasts. Like I said, it's nice to just have good conversations and be able to get information out to people. It's mm-hmm. tough these days. There's a lot of competition to get people's attention. So thank you for, having a podcast. It's wonderful that you do this, and I know there's time and money and effort that you put into this. So thank you for doing that, and thank you very much for inviting me onto your show.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for coming. Of course, you're always welcome to come back. We wish you the absolute best of luck in this election. You definitely sound better than the incumbent, and significantly more progressive than some of the folks running against you. So I really do think you would be the best candidate in this particular race. So I really have high hopes and wish the absolute best for you in this particular election. So, yeah.
Thank you. And you know, if we're successful, I would love to come back on your show and we can talk about what's next.
Absolutely. Love
to
have you on.
We have big plans. We really have some really kind of just really cool ideas for the future. Things like buying a van and having kind of kitting it up like a kind of a science lab. And we're going to go to the lake and test the water and the rivers and go to the national parks. And we're going to have videographers to really document the environment and what's happening in Illinois and recycling centers. We're going to spend a lot of time on the earth and the environment and what's happening. And when we get to D.C., boy, we've got so many great fights up there, just so many good, you know, there's so much happening. And we'll be so proud to be a part of that. And we get to take our staff to D.C. and keep some people here. And again, we're forming communities and we're developing leaders here.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, I can't thank you enough.
Excellent. Did you have anything else you wanted to add before we wrap up? Anybody in the comment section, is there anything else you wanted to add before we wrap up? We'll give everybody a minute to just kind of work it out. What?
Can you actually track are people listening? Do you know how many people are listening? There's no way to know that, is
there? Yeah. When we're live, it'll be low, mm-hmm. right? Like, it'll come in, like, you'll be like, all right, there's 8 people, there's 10 people, there's 15, then there's 3, then there's 5.
Mm-hmm.
And then you go back and look at the archives and you're like, okay, now there's 300 views on the video, and the podcast always does better. Like, oh, look, 2,000 downloads. Good. You know, like about every 2 days, I'm looking at about 2,000 and a half downloads.
Well, tell them you have the Benjamin Thomas Wolf, the cannabis candidate, on, and I'm sure that'll get them.
Yes.
You know, apparently this cannabis topic is a hot button for people, and it's been working. I had no idea that photograph would just set things into a frenzy for us, but it has really worked, and the cannabis community cares, and we're really proud to be a part of it and to represent people that have, like I said, been just ostracized and stigmatized and hidden and pushed away and laughed at and arrested. People are being arrested for medicine, for taking medicine. So, again, we're proud to be here.
Yeah, I can guarantee.
Thank you so much. I can't thank you enough.
Yeah, I'm sure at least one person watching right now is watching because you are the cannabis candidate, because they are also a fan of the medicinal properties of said herb. So, yes, definitely.
Excellent.
Push that. That is important just as far as being more eco-friendly, as far as a source of revenue, and particularly as far as a social justice measure to make life a little easier for people who use it and have had ridiculously severe consequences as a result. So please do keep up with that. So
absolutely.
All right, I think we're good. So thank you very much for coming on. Again, it's in the show notes. It's going to be on the website. We will tweet this. Yeah. Yeah, I think that's everything. I think that's all the things it's going to, all the places it's going to be, right?
Yes.
Yeah. And of course, check your favorite podcast app. And of course, this was Benjamin Thomas Wolf, who is running for Congress in Illinois. Please go out and vote, support the campaign, visit the website, boost social media if you can. We really, really, really need progressive candidates. And I think I'm done. You have anything?
No.
All right. All right, everybody, have a good night.
Good night, and thank you again.
Thank you.
Thanks, take care.
All right, so now Facebook Live ended and telephone call ended. And again, that's the 5th Congressional District. And I guess maybe I'll title the episode like Uppity Negress and the Cannabis Candidate. We'll gosh darn do that. Ooh, what is all that? All right, well, I don't know what that is.
It was probably when I was turning off the phone because it did the beep when the phone call ended.
Oh, shoot. Probably. All right, well. Yeah. And remember, patreon.com/winecellarmediafund and paypal.me/phoenixandwilliam. Have a good one.